Welcome to episode 45 of the Running on Ohm podcast with Matt Frazier, creator of No Meat Athlete, runner, author, and coach. In this episode, Matt shares his background in running, from his first marathon to qualifying for the Boston Marathon 7 years later with a time that was over 100 minutes faster than his first. Matt discusses how he initially became vegetarian, the impact of a plant-based diet on his running, and his later transition to veganism. He reveals the breakthrough experience and the success of his No Meat Athlete blog. Matt discusses his inspirations from his must-reads to vegan athletes that he looks up to. Lastly, Matt gives the inside scoop on what's next in his training and for the No Meat Athlete community in the upcoming year. If you would like to connect with Matt and the Running on Ohm community, you can find us on runningonohm.com, Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram. In addition, in order to help others find the Running on Ohm podcast, it would be very helpful if you could leave a review on iTunes. Welcome, Matt, to the Running on Ohm podcast.
Thanks a lot. It's good to be here.
So what is your background in athletics? I know you discovered running a little bit later on, but were you an athlete growing up?
You know, I was a casual athlete like a lot of kids. I mean, I was into baseball and soccer as a younger kid, and I got a little bit more serious into it. I played a little bit of high school baseball and then actually switched to golf in high school, just found that was a little bit better match for my abilities. I was kind of a small kid. So golf was good, and I hated running, though. Absolutely hated it, didn't want a thing to do with it, and didn't really get into running until college after I had started. Just kind of wanted to take control of my health and got into weightlifting and just general fitness rather than for any particular sport, and then running came after that.
When did your desire to run distances and to run your first marathon happen?
That was in college. I had, like I said, kind of just decided on my own that I wanted to get healthy because I didn't really we were an active family, but there was never much background. It wasn't too much focus on healthy eating or doing exercise for the sake of exercise. It was just like go play sports on Saturdays. So in college was the first time when I decided for myself that I was going to do a workout plan and stick to a plan, even when I didn't feel like it, you know. So I did the Body for Life plan. It was a popular thing back then. And actually got into shape, and part of that was running. And I got up to running 3 miles or so on these days that alternated with the workout days. And some friends and I started getting really into lifting and just kind of the competitiveness, I guess, of college kids and the, sort of, I don't know what it is, brashness or, you know, we're like, well, let's do a marathon. We can do that. Like, we see people doing this. This is a really cool thing. There's no reason we couldn't do that ourselves. So we just signed up and decided we were going to do it. And none of us was a runner, like, beyond this sort of, you know, 2 or 3 miles on a non-workout day that you would just go for that. Like, nobody had running shoes or running shorts or any of that. We just signed up and said, we're going to do this. And also, like, right kind of intertwined with that was, again, that same competitive sort of take on the world attitude was we found out that you couldn't run the Boston Marathon unless you qualified. So we had hoped to run the Boston Marathon as our first one, and we realized then, okay, it takes a 3-hour and 10-minute marathon for us to do it. We're like, okay, we can do that. We'll just qualify in this first one, and then we'll run that for our next one. So we all wrote that down in our anticipated finish time that they want you to write so that they can put you in the right corral, which ended us up in the very front of the 20,000 people in this. Been a disastrous experience, as you can imagine.
Wow. So when did you qualify for Boston, finally?
I qualified in 2009, which was 7 years after I ran that first marathon back in 2002. And that first one, it took 4 hours and 53 minutes. And over that 7 years, I've learned how to train, learned how to eat, and just slowly kind of chipped away at the time. There were big gains at first and then very small ones later on, but just kind of kept plugging away at it and finally got there.
So why did your diet change? How did you decide you wanted to become a vegetarian? Was it a gradual transition, or was it similar to your desire to stick to that workout plan to really hold yourself accountable?
That was something that actually came fairly late. Like I did that. I think they made the switch to vegetarian about 6 months before I finally qualified for Boston. So during that 7 years, you know, I was focusing on, I read nutrition books and I read Chris Carmichael's book and the Paleo Diet for Athletes. Like I was doing these different things and trying to figure out the best nutrition for my running. And finally got this urge to become vegetarian, like not for any sort of athletic reason. It was totally just ethical. I just felt like I kind of needed to do this. I just had started reading some books and got a dog and just kind of like became more in tune with animals and their feelings and didn't want to eat them anymore. So that was extremely inconvenient, I thought. I was like, if I do that, that means the end of this Boston Marathon thing. Like that to me, going vegetarian meant giving up on that. And that's why I didn't do it at first. And I kind of like halfway did it. So I stopped eating red meat and pork and said, oh, I'll just have chicken breast and fish, because I thought those were like the healthiest meats you could have. And I still think there's some of the healthier meats you can have. But I thought that was an absolutely essential part of a runner's diet. So I kept doing that. And then finally I got to this point where I was a little bit frustrated with my progress towards Boston. I plateaued about 10 minutes shy of qualifying. I was at a 3:20 marathon. And for the first time, I started to doubt that I was going to make it. I just thought, how am I possibly going to take 10 more minutes off of my time when I've come this far? It just seemed like an eternity of time left to take off. So at that point, I said, I'm going to switch to vegetarian now because I don't really think this Boston thing is going to happen. And it's not as important to me as the vegetarian thing is, so I'm going to do it. And that's when I started the blog, and it was kind of a gradual transition. I think I ate fish only. I mean, cut out the chicken and turkey, and just ate fish for 2 or 3 weeks. Even after I'd started the blog, I was still eating that stuff a little bit. But then I knew that I was transitioning away from it, and eventually did.
What did that feel like to run and qualify for Boston?
It was incredible. I mean, I had visualized it so many times in my own head during my training. Like it was the dream I was chasing for all this time. It's one of the biggest successes in my life. Maybe the biggest success. I mean, of course, getting married, having kids, graduating college, those things are big successes, but I feel like they are kind of routine successes. Like everyone does those. This was the thing where like, I didn't think I could do this. And I mean, part of me didn't. On some level, I really did believe it. And when I told people that I was going to do it, some people would laugh. Friends would like bet me money that I couldn't do it. And it was that thing where everyone else thought I couldn't, and I just had this feeling that I could. There were certainly moments of doubt, but you know, I just during a lot of my runs, I would visualize it, and I would imagine, especially during like an easy run where I would kind of zone out, and I would imagine like close my eyes if I could on a trail, and like imagine what would it feel like if I was approaching the finish line of my Boston Marathon qualifying race. And I could look up and see the finish line and see that it was at like 3:08 or 3:07. And I realized I had enough time to get there. And I just played that event over and over in my head so many times. So when it actually happened, it was like, I mean, it was incredible. I cried as soon as I was done. My wife was there and I just hugged her and said I did it. And it was just, it was amazing and incredible. But I felt like I knew what it was going to be because I had done it in my head so many times. So it was very special. And to have done it as an example that a vegetarian diet can work for sports and may even make, for some people like me, may even make you faster, or I mean, if you do it right, may get you to a higher level of fitness than what you could be without it. That's what it did for me, and that was a huge surprise. So to have done that with a lot of people now watching, because I'd started the blog, so there were, I don't know, 500 or 1,000 people who, you know, followed it and knew what I was doing. So it was very, very special. One of those big successes that where everything goes right and it just, you know, you can't, there's nothing to complain about.
What did it feel like in your body to be running no meat at that point? Did you feel lighter? Did you feel more energetic? What was the physical, emotional experience?
As soon as I went vegetarian, like within literally that same week, I noticed that I had more energy. And I don't think that was a case of this food is healthier for me, so I have more energy. It was just that I was, you know, because plant-based food generally has fewer calories in a given volume than dairy products or meat do. So it was like after dinner, I would be full for a little bit, but I wouldn't be stuffed for the whole next 2 hours. So all of a sudden I had this extra time and I felt like I had this energy in these extra few hours in the night and I would get up earlier. So I was getting workouts in really consistently and I was training harder than I ever, like that summer, I trained harder than I ever had. Definitely, it was a very demanding program, and when I would finish a run, it'd be like, I don't know how I'm going to recover from this in 2 days from now and do, you know, another workout that's just as hard. And, you know, I trained plenty, so I kind of had the experience of knowing that when things seem to be going this well, when I'm getting this excited about running, the injury's not too far away. Like, it's always kind of, that's when it starts to show up. And this summer, it didn't show up. It was just such a great summer of training. my energy was great, my mindset was great, and you know, I really, what I attribute that to is not so much that I cut meat, I cut this poison out of my diet. Like, I just don't really think of it that way. I think it was that I started bringing in all these amazing foods that I had been ignoring, and you know, so I think you can be a strong athlete eating meat still. I mean, plenty of paleo dieters are examples of that. But I think it's very hard to be a strong athlete if you're not eating the whole fresh fruits and vegetables. I think that really is an important component that is so often overlooked. And I had read all the nutrition books and stuff, but to me, all I got out of that was protein, carbs, and fat. And it was like, if I get these three things in the right amounts, then I'm doing the best I can for my body as a runner. But once I went vegetarian, I was kind of forced to get outside of this like chicken breast and brown rice box that I was in, where I thought that's what the ideal meal was. And all of a sudden, I was going to farmers markets, and I was checking out Thai restaurants, and I was trying to cook that stuff at home. And like just all these new vegetables that I had never considered buying at the grocery store, I was now eating on a regular basis. And I think that was the really big factor.
Beautiful. Now, with No Meat Athlete, what was the biggest breakthrough in the blog and in your work with it over the past few years? I know you have No Meat Academy now, which is an amazing resource, your book, No Meat Athlete. But what has been kind of the big turning point where you felt like people were really receiving what you were doing?
That is a great question. I mean, I know I made a really big shift about – it was fairly soon after I qualified for Boston, actually. Like, up until that point, this first 6 months of the blog, it had been – about my journey, and I would write about like how my workout was this day and what diet change I was making, and maybe even like what I ate for what smoothie I had after my workout that day. And after that Boston thing was done, I felt like the blog kind of lost that appeal, like of following a story, a journey that's really interesting and you know, compelling, which I think that really was. But I went through myself a little kind of a running little rut. Like once this big goal was gone and there was this void now, it was like what to do now. And I did get into ultra running, so that was a new thing. But I definitely felt kind of a lull in the motivation and the energy after having done that. And I think my blog kind of had the same thing happen. Like I just sort of lost that ability to now have this really compelling story. And I decided to shift it to make it more about like teaching people. And I said, like, now I feel comfortable, like, telling people what I've done, because people had really started to engage with it and started to ask me questions like what I was doing. So it stopped being about my experiment and me being this new person trying this out, but now someone who had made this work and trying to start to help others do it. So, like, I still try to do that by being an example more than telling people they should do it. I don't like to do that at all, but it just became about giving tools, like teaching people, like here's, you know, five ways to get protein that you might not have known about, or how to get back into running when you're not feeling it. Because I was going through exactly that. So a lot of like how-to content and stuff that I just thought would be really, really useful if you saw it in a Facebook or Twitter feed. It would just be kind of a link you'd want to click, and not just the kind of links like that don't provide any value once you get there, those sort of link bait things, but really valuable articles. And I tried to have a very high standard for the content that went out, which made me start publishing a lot less, and that was another kind of big thing. Was starting to being okay with publishing once or twice a week, or even less than that, when I didn't have anything to write about, rather than saying I need to get something up every single day, no matter if it's good or not.
What has been the most popular post of yours from your website, and why is that?
You know, I don't know why it is. The one that has been the most popular is called "The 17 Weirdest Things I Do Now That I'm Vegan."
And, I love it.
Yeah, it was. I mean, I don't know. I had an idea that people might like it, but I don't know why, because it really doesn't have that healthy eating. Because it was just kind of about these quirky foods that I was eating, and like just some other shifts that had changed. Like I don't know, everywhere, and like just got more into like earthy, granola, crunchy, outdoorsy type stuff that I've never really been into. I'm not that type of person. I think the reason is that, you know, that a lot of people, so many people have emailed and said, like, yes, this is perfect. 15 of these things I do. And it somehow hit on this common thing. And I think there are a lot of people, especially No Meat Athlete readers, who are like me and aren't, you know, didn't grow up the passionate, ethical, activist vegan, but like kind of considered themselves very much toward the center and normal and not extreme. And then making this diet work, you know, feeling extreme in the way they eat, making it work and still trying to like live a normal life and just kind of taking note of these things that, you know, a year ago I would have said was really weird for me to be doing these things. So yeah, people liked it. I don't know what exactly it was, but Huffington Post republished it and Business Insider, a bunch of like big sites republished it. So that has definitely been the highest traffic post, the most shared one, I think.
What was your transition like from vegetarian to vegan? Why did you make that next step?
That step was one that it really wasn't on purpose or deliberate at first. Like, I just, when I decided to go vegetarian, it was for ethical reasons. But I also started to learn about some of the health concerns, especially about dairy. And I just stopped drinking milk when I went vegetarian. I just stopped having milk in my cereal or wherever else. And it took 2 years between being vegetarian and going vegan. But that 2 years was just kind of that gradual shift, starting from not having milk at the beginning of it to probably after the first year, I started saying, you know what, I just want to start eating a little bit less cheese. And I would just kind of like, without saying I'm going to stop eating cheese, I just started using it less and started buying it less and started buying vegan cookbooks because I just tended to like be more interested in those kind of recipes. And finally, after about 2 years, I was eating cheese like once every 2 weeks or once a month or something when I would order pizza, just like want a break and want to eat pizza and just, you know I was going to feel disgusting after it, but just do it anyway. And it finally took me to say, okay, like I am going to actually draw a line here. And after this day, I am not eating cheese anymore because it would be a very convenient thing to keep doing now and then. But I had watched like Earthlings, which is a documentary about animal cruelty. I think they call it the vegan maker because it makes a lot of people want to become vegan. And just like after having gone vegetarian, started the blog and got more immersed in this whole community, I started to become aware of the ethical aspects to it and started to understand, really started to feel that as far as animal cruelty goes, like drinking cow's milk isn't really much better. Some would say it's worse than eating meat. So, you know, I just felt like I was kind of being incongruent by having cheese still in my diet and eggs and things like that. So it wasn't really a hard step. Once I decided it's done and like went to the grocery store and went to a restaurant and had those restrictions a few times, it really became very simple to do. It wasn't a hard thing at all, I didn't think.
What has it been like being a father and being vegan? Is your wife or your children vegan, and how do you navigate that? And for listeners, how do you suggest that they navigate something like that, special dietary needs in the family setting?
So we have two kids. One is a 4-year-old son, and we started him off vegetarian because that's what we were when we had him, and then we went vegan once he was, I think, one. And we kept him on cow's milk after we went vegan just because that's what he was used to, and we didn't want to do a big shift. But gradually we shifted him away towards almond milk after he turned two, I think. So he is now vegan. I'm fairly lenient, and so is my wife, with what he eats. We don't ever buy non-vegan food for him. We don't ever certainly cook non-vegan food in the house. But like he plays t-ball on a t-ball team. And if the snack that a parent brings isn't vegan, like if it's, I don't know, if it's a food that is just awful, we don't want him to eat it because it's just so unhealthy and we don't want him to get used to that, then we'll suggest something else. And we'll say, let's go to the ice cream place instead and get some vegan ice cream there. But, you know, like I just don't want him to, I don't want him to be a kid who comes home from school and says, you know, I hate being vegan. Why do we have to do this? I want him to make the choice for himself. So we try as much as we can to steer him and suggest that he not eat the non-vegan food. And like if we say, well, those crackers have cow's milk in them. Are you sure you want that? Very often he'll say no. But sometimes he says, oh, yeah, I really do. And we let him do it. And like we're okay with that because we want him to experience both sides of it and understand. You know, we tell him our reasons for doing it. We don't tell him he has to, but it works. Even for a guy as young as four, he really seems to get it. And I think I'm pretty happy with how we've done that so far. And our daughter is very young, so she's still in the breastfeeding, formula type stage. So we haven't really done too much there, but we'll do the exact same thing with her. I think there's no reason we would do anything different. I don't think.
Very cool. On your website, it says that you love reading. What is one book you think every listener should read? It could be about anything.
Wow. That's hard. I mean, every listener, you know, it's like, I feel like the best books are good because a lot of people would hate them, you know, like, and I try to do that with my blog even. Like, I don't want to write the content that everyone says, yes, this is okay, or this is pretty good. Much better is if you write something where 25% of people think this is amazing, 25% of people hate it, and then you still have that group in the middle who's not sure. But like, the more polarizing something can be, generally, the better. So I think the books that I like the best, most people would not really like. A book that had that for me was kind of life changing. Actually, I'll give two. I'm into Tony Robbins and like the motivational speaker type stuff, you know, self help, personal development, whatever you want to call it. He has a book called "Awaken the Giant Within" that is a pretty old book. I think it's from the late 80s, but it's a big, thick book, tons of exercises, and that was kind of a turning point when I started reading that and did the exercises and started to view myself in this new way and started to like really believe that there was a lot of possibility for myself. I mean, we have all of us just because of our culture, even when our parents are very encouraging and good, we get this idea that like there's a lot out there that's not really for us. It's for the celebrities, or it's for superstars, or people who are born with this talent, or people who have a gift for whatever. And I don't know. I just started to kind of believe that there really weren't those limitations. And the people who do a whole lot and succeed on a very high level, whatever that means for them, are those who deliberately choose to and do the things that it takes to make that happen. So I would highly recommend that one. And another book goes along with that one is called Talent is Overrated. And it's Malcolm Gladwell has a book that's perhaps way more popular called I'm blanking on it, but it's the one where he gives the 10,000 hour rule that basically says
outliers.
Yeah, there you go. So Talent is Overrated, I think, came a little bit earlier than that. Really did a good job of convincing me that even people who you say this person is successful because they have a natural gift for it, like the Tiger Woods or Mozart, like even those people, this book makes the argument that they were not born with any special talent. Maybe a certain liking for an activity, and that liking made them try it when they were young, made them enjoy the process, want to keep practicing. But lots and lots of studies have shown that talent is a very, very tiny piece of achievement. And it's so much more about being willing and making the decision to work really hard at it. And so I don't know. It just to me, those two books are a very powerful combination.
I'll definitely have to check them out myself.
All right.
In the plant-based world, who has been a big inspiration or mentor for you?
You know, I think Brendan Brazier has really – he was – when I started out my site, one of the reasons I started the site was because there wasn't much out there on the internet. Like, there just – I don't know. I looked around for information on how do I do this as a marathoner and how do I make – at least, you know, minimize the damage of this plant-based diet on my marathon training. And, I mean, that's the very reason that I even had that mindset, is because there weren't a lot of positive examples out there. It's not that they weren't happening, but just – it wasn't on the internet very well. The sites that I found were either, you know, unfriendly to the reader, kind of just like they looked like they were really old websites and hard to trust. And others were really ethical and like were like, you know, saying you have to be vegan, like this is the only right way. Anything else is totally wrong and not very welcoming, not very friendly. But Brendan Brazier was one of the first people I did find within a few months of starting out, and he had written a book called Thrive that the message and the way it was presented in terms of the health benefits, not trying to convince anyone that they should do this for ethical reasons, but that there are a lot of health benefits to doing this, that really helped me a lot. And he was extremely generous with his time and support. Like, he would – the blog was so small, and there couldn't have been much benefit for him at all. And he let me share some of his recipes. Just – he was very, very supportive and definitely someone I looked up to a lot and still do. From an athletic perspective, since I'm not a triathlete like he is – Scott Jurek, who is the ultra marathoner, who, you know, he for many years was considered the best ultra runner alive, and now is considered kind of a legend in the sport. And the fact that he did all this with a plant-based diet, a completely vegan diet, to me is just perhaps the best example of the athletic and fitness possibilities that this diet offers. And, you know, just, I know that like not every diet works for everyone, and there are some people maybe for whom it wouldn't work that well, perhaps. But I don't know. To me, you bring up his name, and it just kind of ends the argument about like, can this diet work for endurance sports? And I mean, it absolutely can. So he's been another guy who I've really looked up to a lot, for sure.
In the past month or so, what has been one example for you of feedback on your work? So either a person who was a part of No Meat Academy, someone who read your book, like a touching story you find that you feel like you're really making an impact in someone's life.
They happen fairly often. I mean, I get a lot of emails about people who something really does help them out. I don't know, and for that reason, it makes it hard to just think of any one. The thing that's most coming to mind is that yesterday morning I got an email from someone who had run his first marathon on Saturday, and he was a member of the No Meat Athlete Academy, and we did a couple phone calls where, you know, our focus was just on getting him ready for his marathon, and I had so many examples of my first marathon experience that were so bad, and I've seen so many terrible first marathons that he wrote to me on Monday and said, like, the marathon went great. It was his first one. He said, and at the end, I felt like maybe I could have even started a little bit faster, which is kind of, I mean, I felt like, okay, so maybe we were a little bit too conservative, but to me, that's such a better first marathon experience where you start out not slow enough, finish fast, and feel great about it than the one where you start out too fast, finish really slow, and feel terrible about it and feel like you blew it and you went too fast and you wasted all your training and this day wasn't a success even though you finished. So, I don't know. I mean, I know that's not any sort of inspiring, life-changing example or anything, but it's one that just happened yesterday and certainly makes you feel good. I mean, that I helped someone by getting on the phone and like, I mean, had I had that kind of coaching when I had run my first marathon, my whole path towards Boston, those 7 years would have been different had someone said, here's how to handle this first one. And, you know, I just would have felt like I was starting from a different point after that than feeling like I had an eternity of time to take off. So, yeah, it's just a small example, I guess.
Do you have any desire to run Boston again? Or what are your races and training look like in the upcoming year?
Yeah, I definitely have a desire to run Boston again. When I did it, I, like I said, spent those 7 years trying to qualify. And once I did qualify, it turned out my son was born. His due date was the Boston Marathon day the next year. So I had to take that year off. I couldn't run Boston that year, of course. So it wasn't for a full year after that that I did it. And I kind of viewed it as my reward. Like I said, this is, you know, I've worked so hard. For Boston, I don't really want to train that hard. I just want to go there and don't have any kind of time goal. Just go there and enjoy the race and do it. But what I found out was that when I got there, there's so much history around that race. And there's so much hype about this year's race. Like, who's going to win and who's in it and who's favored and all this stuff. And this was before the bombings and all that stuff happened. So even then, on that day, I was like, wow, this is the greatest race in the world, and I am in no shape to race it. And, like, it turned out to be perfect weather. People were running PRs, and I guess Mutai ran the 202. Didn't totally count because I guess the course is net downhill, or maybe the wind was too favorable or something. But I just felt like I always wanted to get back there and actually race it, like, really do it right. Do it as the same way I had done as I was training to get there, like, showing up in peak condition with all the nerves that go with that. And I didn't have any of that. I just went and enjoyed the course, and it was cool, but I really wish I had done it differently and had a chance to do it differently. So then once the bombing happened, that just, for a lot of people, really, really increased the intensity of the desire to get there, either get there for the first time or get there again. So I would absolutely love to do it. I think it would take a 3:05 marathon for me, maybe even faster than that because of the new qualifying system, if I were to try to do it in the next 2 years, which would be pretty cool. I think I'd like to do that. But I'm not sure. Right now, I did a 100-miler last July. That was my first 100-mile ultra, and that was an incredible experience. I really loved it. I went as well as I could imagine a 100-mile race would go. So I think I'm going to do another one of those. That's kind of on the plan for me, is to do maybe one of those in the spring, and then hopefully take that fitness – I'm talking about next spring, of course – and then hopefully take that fitness to try to run like another a BQ time or something starting from there. So I don't know. My running, I go in and out, and I'm not a model runner in terms of consistency or running for running sake. Like, I really get motivated by goals like those, and I will totally pour myself into it and work so hard at it, and then I'll kind of stop running for 3 months and just not want to do anything relating to running, just, like, do the opposite of running. So, I don't know. But I'm kind of at the end of one of those phases where I'm, like, starting to read running books again and get interested and look at races and do all that. So that's the plan for now, but I really don't know what's next.
I think it's great you can be so real about it and so honest about the fact that it's not always a straight line. You know, being in love with running or anything for that matter, it's not going to always be 100% the whole time.
Yeah, I mean, some people are. Like, there are definitely runners out there who their activity that just makes them whole and makes everything feel right when they get their run in that day. I've never really been that. Like, I've just been motivated by these goals and these kind of external things, and I do all the training and put all that in because it will help me get to where I want to go, what I want to achieve with the running. Never is it, or I mean, rarely is it, where I'm running and I'm thinking, this is the most amazing feeling in the world. I just love this. I never want this to end. I mean, every once in a while that does happen, but I think for some runners it happens all the time. And I think people are different. I think even with other pursuits, some people are more like, have a lot of balance in your life and in all, whatever, seven areas of your life that are important to you, have them all growing at the same time, or be okay that they're not all growing and just be happy with where they are. I'm much more of like, I will dive into one and push the boundary of it and then get sick of it and do something else. And kind of my form of balance, I guess, is always alternating between the different areas.
Now, what are you looking forward to in the upcoming months with your No Meat athlete?
Well, the community is a cool free site. I mean, the Academy you've mentioned is a paid site and it's a membership. And there's lots of really good content there and expert stuff. But what I'm actually really excited about is the free community that's built on the same platform, just so that people can connect. And if there's a race in a certain area, runners can, you know, vegetarian or vegan runners can get together and say, hey, like, I'm also a No Meat athlete reader. Let's get together the night before at this vegan restaurant or whatever. And I just really want to kind of facilitate those offline together, or even if just virtually, but all train for a particular race and, you know, people use the forums, coordinate, meet up, just all that kind of stuff. I'm really excited about that sort of stuff, actually, more than anything else.
That's great. To close up our interview, I have a few fun either-or questions.
Okay, great.
Apples or oranges?
Definitely oranges, by far.
Early bird or night owl?
I used to be a night owl, but having kids has completely changed that. Like, it's I don't have a choice anymore. I have to be an early bird, and I have to go to bed early if I want to be alive the next day.
Smoothies or juices?
Definitely smoothies. I think I personally think the juice is not a health food, and that when you remove the juice from the fiber and everything else in there, you're kind of preventing your body from using it the way it's meant to be used and the way your body knows how to use it. So I'm a much bigger fan of smoothies for that reason.
And our last one, mountains or oceans?
Oh, you know what? I live in the mountains, but I still really like the ocean. I think it's, I would say ocean over mountain. Not sure why. Just if I were going on vacation, I'd pick the ocean.
Thank you so much, Matt, for sharing your story and insight on the Running on Ohm podcast.
Sure, this has been a lot of fun. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to episode 45 of the Running on Ohm podcast with Matt Frazier, creator of No Meat Athlete, runner, author, and coach. If you would like to connect with Matt and the Running on Ohm community, you can find us on runningonohm.com, Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram. In addition, in order to help others find the Running on Ohm podcast, it would be very helpful if you could leave a review on iTunes. This is your host, Julia Hanlon, and I hope you have a beautiful day.